I did not know. Dude.
It was, he's making it. It was a group, like an accompaniment group. So yeah. It wasn't like.
Look, there's a.
It was still cool.
There's a buddy of mine that's up in Memphis. And he was a student trainer when I was there, when I worked at Memphis. Anyway, he's got a son, literally 14, 15 years old. And I keep up with him on Facebook, but his son is a drummer.
Yeah.
And I saw him at the CETA meeting. Mm-hmm. And I said, man, I see where your kids play in all these places in Memphis. He says, Ray, man. So he's telling me like Bag of Donuts is wanting him to play with him. Your kid's 15 years old or 14 years old.
Yeah, I'm not that young.
And I'm like, incredible.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. Hey, how far away do we need to be? How far away?
Usually within 12 inches.
Okay.
I did not know that's the reason you went to East Carolina.
Yep, and then also, I mean, there's family reasons too. But no, I had a great sports medicine, and I love it.
Isn't it good being back home?
Yes.
Because I see you go to the games a lot. You go to your beach house.
Yeah.
A lot. You know, when I left Memphis, I literally thought 2, 3, maybe 4 years at most, and I'd get back in it.
God, I want to record this, right? You know, stop. This would be good.
Oh. All right, here we go in 3, 2, 1. What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast. We are live at the 2017 NATA Expo, chilling at the Frio Hydration booth. We have the legend, Jared Plummer, Don Joy, Salesman of the Year. Hey, and Jared is an amazing talker, very smart guy, and that's why I asked him to be out here. And he's brought a friend of his, Ray. Ray, thanks for coming over and joining me and Jared on the broadcast today.
Well, thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
All right, so Jared is going to take away this one from here, and I'll be back in a minute.
Cool. Thanks, man. I appreciate it. So first off, for starters, I love being back here at NATA. It's a whole lot of fun. Great seeing, you know, people you haven't seen in years and years, and you know, rekindling, you know, relationships that you developed, you know, a long time ago, and then every year getting to redevelop it. But one of them in particular is a guy, Ray Burr, and I wanted to bring him on because he's been, you know, you have some of those people in your career that you don't realize how much of a mentor or how much of an impact they make on you. And I don't want Ray to start crying, but Ray's one of them. And anybody who's ever known him, he has a friend in everyone. I don't know of anyone. Of course, we might see a few name drops of people he's not friends with, but I don't know any person who's not absolutely obsessed. And when they know Ray Burr, they know who Ray is. But Ray, thank you for coming. I really appreciate it.
Well, first of all, thank you. Yeah. Golly, that is big time.
Checking the mail.
Look, please, big check, big check. Look, first of all, I want to say it was a pleasure working with you. Now, I mean, it's been a long time ago, and you were a young man.
Yeah, I was, and I'm still. Thank you for saying
but,
that.
But look, man, it was great working with you.
So when I was, I graduated from East Carolina, and then I went to Southeastern Louisiana University for graduate school.
Yeah.
And Ray, I met through Mississippi Sports Medicine, based out of Jackson, Mississippi. They needed some coverage for some high school football, and Ray reached out to, was it Karen?
It was. Karen was a student of mine when I worked at the University of New Orleans.
Okay, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, Karen, when I left the University of Arkansas, and if you're an athletic trainer listening to this, you know we bounce around a lot, but. Yep. When I left Arkansas, I went to New Orleans. Karen was the only student we had, and I dumped everything on her. And I was a young athletic trainer in my 20s. But anyway, Karen went on and became hugely successful and went to Southeastern. And it was. I called her up about getting some people to help. You know, it was low pay money. You know that. But to put you in an environment to where it was you and to see how you'd respond and everyone listening out there in radio land, Jared was great, great, great to the point that when he left me, I cried.
Just like you cried when I was giving him the positive introduction from before. But the person we were referencing earlier is Karen Liu. Karen, what's her last name?
It's not Karen Liu. She's been married.
Oh, my gosh. And Dan is her husband. That's all I know. What is it?
Yeah. Feehan.
Okay. Yep. So Karen was the program director at Southeastern Louisiana University. And she's the one who actually, Fearman is her name. F-E-I-R-M-A-N.
Yeah.
Karen Fearman. But Karen was someone who I met through cheerleading, like a cheerleading mm-hmm. company, UCA, Varsity Spirit. And did you work for?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, look, and we could even get into that, but it's amazing how.
It's amazing how tight the circle is.
It really is, yeah.
I mean, just when you think that we're miles apart, we're really only a few yards apart.
Yeah, 1 or 2 degrees, you know, that Kevin Bacon, but in
reality. That's true. I did the cheerleading camps, and Karen, again, when I got to New Orleans, I don't know how it came about. I think she asked me about it. And back then, there was two camps. There was Universal Cheerleaders and then...
UVA, the dance, maybe?
Well, no, there was Universal Cheerleaders and something else. And we always considered ourselves NCAA.
Yeah, of course.
And I told Karen, I said, I enjoyed it. It was great. It put me in an environment where it was just me and 150 cheerleaders.
Exactly.
And she took it and is still doing it to this day.
It's a little bit of sink and swim when you're a student.
I'm telling you.
Yeah, for sure. When you're it's funny even going back and we'll talk a little about careers for both of us, but going back and looking at it, you know, I had opportunities to work internships at some, you know, some NFL and some professional baseball or whatever. And I got to be honest with you, I'm so thankful that I worked for Varsity Spirit and UCA, because you're talking about your sink or swim.
Oh, yeah.
You're out there on your own. You had to learn it. And that's very similar to the whole deal with Mississippi Sports Medicine.
Well, you know, when you're in a university setting as a student.
Yeah.
You put out waters and you clean the athletic training rooms and you do stuff like that. And very, very seldom will you evaluate anything. It's usually after it's been evaluated 3 or 4 times will they say, come here and look, and this is what a Lockman test is.
That's right.
And so very seldom will you do that. And I distinctly remember the first time I had a young girl tear an ACL. Mm-hmm. We were at one of your old stomping grounds, Ole Miss.
Yeah.
And we were in the Tad Pad in Tad Smith Coliseum, and it was one night that
they upgraded it to the pavilion.
Yes.
Yeah, they got a new one. Go ahead.
But we were in there, and I think we had 1,100 or 1,200 kids. Yeah. Ole Miss was always a massive camp. Parents were down, and this is back when they could build. Mm-hmm. And they were building, and pyramids. And we were up in the tunnel, in that one tunnel, mm-hmm. just chilling out. And on the floor of Tad Smith, they had put paper so you wouldn't scuff the floor. And the paper had been roughed up a little bit. Well, the paper tore, and so the pyramid crashes. So there's 3 or 4 athletic trainers, man. We go running out there, and there's kids laying everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
And I go to this one girl, and she's holding her knee. And I remember doing my Lockman, and the only thing going through my brain was, it's exactly like they taught us.
Oh, my gosh. That's
it moves just like, and I must have did the Lockman 20 times on her instead of getting her off the floor.
Sorry, princess.
But. Yeah. And I was like, oh, my God. Yeah. It's exactly that way.
First time I ever really had a spine boarding. Yeah. I feel like I've got really proficient at spine boarding from cheerleading, as you could probably imagine, too. But, no, you're right. You know, given the opportunity, And, you know, frankly, I think sometimes, you know, we kind of look back on athletic training education programs and, you know, some of the old timers criticize and all that. But I'll tell you, I feel like in some instances, we have somewhat to a point gotten away to not gotten away. It's just different.
I would agree. I think I'm an old timer.
Sure.
I like teaching you and then putting you through the fire.
Yeah.
And I hate being critical, but sometimes I don't know if the newer profession is really put through the test.
Much of a strain.
Because every situation is not going to be perfect. And when you're in a clinical setting, but when you're in a a setting that is pristine.
Very, very
yes,
and yeah.
In very pristine.
Yeah.
Well, then when you get out into the real world and you run out of cups,
yeah.
You know,
you got to
piece it together in
yeah.
your brain, and
you got to figure it out. And that ultimately is what athletic training profession is.
That's
really.
Exactly
and,
right.
And like I said, it's certainly not a bash session, certainly, but that's something that I'm appreciative. I'll say it like that.
Yeah.
I'm appreciative.
I am too. I am
of
too.
The ability to kind of have those moments and whether it be cheerleading or Mississippi sports medicine. Well, how about this? What's your so where all did you go to school? What's your backstory?
Oh, very simple. University of Southern Mississippi.
For everything.
I did. When I graduated high school, I went to a junior college
okay.
and tried to play football for a year.
Yeah.
And that did not work. I was way too slow.
Okay.
So I went and talked to my old coach, James Booty Sloan.
Okay.
And a tremendous motivator, tremendous. Mm-hmm. Still to this day, the greatest halftime or pregame speech I've ever witnessed.
Yeah.
But he didn't want me to quit, and I just knew I hurt.
Yeah.
My legs had hurt, my back hurt. And he let me stay on and be a manager. And from there, I learned how to tape an ankle
yep.
with the old Kramer mm-hmm. notebook, workbook. And I could tape an ankle with two rolls of tape.
Sure.
And so I go to Southern Miss to be a manager.
Okay.
And through that, I ran into a guy named Jim Gillespie. Who absolutely changed my life. And he said, well, what about being a student trainer?
Now, who's Jim?
Jim was the curriculum director at Southern Miss.
Okay.
When I got to Southern Miss in 84,
okay.
Jim was there. At that time, when he started the program at Southern Miss in 75, 76, it was one of literally a handful of curriculums throughout the country. And then in the early 80s, Alabama came up with one or somewhere around in there. And then it sort of snowballed from there. But Jim is my mentor.
Yeah.
He is one that literally would put us through the fire. I mean, his classes were rough and
yeah.
tough. And it was a weeding out process. He weeded out people. If
mm-hmm.
you couldn't stand his fire,
mm-hmm.
you were gone. That's
yeah.
exactly right.
Yeah.
So I get to Southern and go through the curriculum. And then I took a job in 88 at Slidell Memorial Hospital
okay.
doing clinical outreach.
Yep.
And I woke up one morning and decided I really wanted to get into college. I wanted to try college. So I was a single man. I quit my job.
Okay.
And through the grace of God, Jim brought me back and put me on a sort of like a graduate assistant at Southern. So I did my undergrad and grad at Southern Miss.
Okay.
And from there, when I graduated in 93, the little black book, the address
mm-hmm.
book, the NCAA
yep.
book.
Absolutely, yeah.
I took it home one afternoon
mm-hmm.
and started with the A's and of where I thought I would like to work.
Yeah.
And I think I sent out 45 letters.
Mm-hmm.
And one response, and that was the University of Arkansas, a guy named Dean Weber.
Yeah, yeah.
And Dean, actually Dave England called me, his assistant, and we go up on an interview, and a couple of weeks later, I mean, right the end of April, they call me back and say, all right, you're it.
Yeah.
And when can you be here? And I think I had an exam on a Thursday.
Okay. At Southern Miss, right?
At Southern Miss.
Yep.
This was in graduate school,
yep.
finishing up.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think I did an exam on a Thursday, and Dean was like, well, we'll see you Monday. And literally, I packed up my car Friday and everything. Packed it up. They had me a room in the athletic dorm. Me and the other football assistant. I was the third assistant. Kevin was the second assistant, and then you had Dean.
Okay.
And he put us both in Bud Walton Hall.
Okay, yeah.
And that's where I lived.
Love it.
And then from there, came
John,
back.
Where are you, Arkansas?
Huh?
How long were you at Arkansas?
Ooh, not long. One football season.
Okay.
I left with one football game. I got there the 1st of May.
We take Suey, right?
Well, I tell you what, when you come from the University of Southern Mississippi
yeah.
and you've only got 5,000 people in your stands.
Then you go to
yeah.
War Memorial, or where were they at the time?
We played both places.
Okay.
We played in Fayetteville and we played in War
yep.
Memorial. And the first game that year, we played SMU in Dallas.
Okay.
Pardon me. But the second game, we played South Carolina in Fayetteville.
Okay.
And I'll never forget the complex at the end of the football stadium. I was would lead you right to the sideline. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the complex spanned the end of the football field.
Yep.
And they had these garage doors that would open up. And there was a little inside turf area that we could work out in and stuff. And they would raise the middle door. And when you did, you were right behind the goalpost.
Right.
Well, on the ends of those big garage doors were some regular doors you'd see at the end of a hallway at a school.
Yep.
And I went to go out that, and Dean goes, "Where are you going?" I said, "I'm going to the sideline." He said, "No, we go out with a team."
Oh, okay.
And Jared, the first time I'd ever ran out, and I think I beat half the football team.
Okay, you were Jack, huh?
I beat half the football team in the sideline. Oh, my goodness.
Exciting. How many is 50,000?
It was only about 50. It was only a two-sided stadium. You had home side, had the upper deck that they called Hog Heaven.
Yep.
And then you had the visitor side, and that was it. It wasn't horseshoed in. It was this little old stadium.
My first experience, I'm an ECU grad, and then went to Southeastern Louisiana, we said before, and was hired by Maryland, and that was my first.
Yeah.
Getting to it. And now I was primarily the baseball guy, but Daryl allowed me to work some of the home games for football, and I'll tell you what, man, I sure enough, I went out and there was a played Florida State, if I recall, they're number 5 in the country as a night game, and I believe that was probably my first game where I had a chance to be on the sidelines, and you're daggone right, I ran out of time. I touched the Tussudo, the turtle's nose. Dude, it was, you're from small town Mississippi. I'm a little, Eastern North Carolina guy. That was exciting, man.
We had a hog. Our equipment manager had a little cherry wood box that had a metallic hog, that the emblem, the with the snout and stuff. And we'd go off on trips, and he would put that hog above the door. We're at the University of Georgia. And, everybody's making fun because the door must have been like a 10-foot door, 12-foot door. I couldn't touch it.
you're not exactly the tallest guy.
No, I'm not. So my buddy Kevin gets up under it and gets down on a knee. I step on his knee. I touch it. We got the whole training staff runs out. Exactly. The whole training staff runs out onto the field. But
So you were at Arkansas.
And then I was there. I got there in the 1st of May. And I left the end of November with one football game left. A great friend of mine was at the University of New Orleans, left, called me up, and it was close to home. I loved Fayetteville, but Northwest Arkansas, I wasn't a fan of.
Yeah.
I loved the Razorbacks.
Sure.
But Dean Weber was hugely kind. He said, "Dude, get out of here. Go, go."
You had opportunity.
So I went to the University of New Orleans, and I was there from the end of 93 to 97.
Yep. Working with what?
We didn't have football, so it was men's basketball and baseball.
Yep.
And my coach when I got there was a guy named Tim Floyd, and Coach Floyd was a no-nonsense. We didn't worry about stretching. We didn't worry about weightlifting. It was throw the ball up and go for 2.5 hours, and that was it. Yeah, didn't care about anything. And the great thing that he did for me, if I told him an athlete was out, fine, I'm moving on to the next player. It wasn't, what are we doing? When are we doing it? He'd let me do my thing, and greatly appreciate him for that. And then the next guy, we actually hired a coach named Tommy Joe Eagles, and Coach Eagles wasn't there but a couple of months and was out recruiting. I think I'd only met him twice, and he fell dead of a heart attack.
Oh, man. Okay.
So they moved his assistant up, a guy named Tick Price.
Okay.
And I worked with Tick to 97, and Tick got hired in 97 at the University of Memphis.
Okay.
And a couple of months later, he called me up and said, they've got an opening. Are you interested? And it was a move I had to make.
Sure.
I mean, it was a professional move up, and it was a money move up.
Sure.
So from 97 to 2002, I was at the University of Memphis doing men's basketball.
Yeah.
And I went there with great expectations. In from where I came from, and even with you, you talk basketball. Well, it's Memphis basketball.
Yeah.
I mean, we never played Kentucky or Kansas. But in the old Metro Conference tournament, which preceded you.
I heard of it.
Memphis State, when they had William Bedford and Keith Lee, they would come to Hattiesburg. And, they were giants.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking going there. But I had a great 5 years there. It just didn't turn out the way I thought it was going to be. I had three coaches in 5 years. But to Jared, the profession changed a little bit.
What do you feel like was the or when do you feel like you felt like the profession changed? And what do you mean by change?
Well, when I started at Arkansas in 93, you know, an athlete would come in and we would treat him and we would log it. And we would, you know, we would take care of the athlete the best way we could back then. Go up to 2001, 2002, and I've got moms and dads calling me going, well, why haven't you done this and why haven't you done that? I had a lot more coaches telling me about treatments. You know, I want him to get an MRI.
Yep.
I had a coach one time tell me if my kid wants an, it needs an MRI, get him a blank MRI. And so it was a little different. It was a little different. And two, you know, the situation I was in at Memphis was a unique situation. When you were in college, you were on a lot bigger staffs and a lot more, I think, structured staffs.
Sure.
At the University of Memphis, we were not structured.
Sure.
You know, we would talk about the weekend coverage Friday afternoon.
Yeah.
And, you know, and we got track and baseball and, and you know, and everything. Exactly. And we're going to talk about it the day before.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was just a different time.
Yeah.
And I think I was getting a little tired. I was getting a little burned because the other thing, too, from 93 to 02, I remember having time off in the summer, man.
Yeah.
I remember having time off in the summer, and you get to 02, and I, one of the things that really sort of opened my eyes, I had an athlete in that 01, 02 year, had just a bad chronic knee problem, just chronic. And we had worked with him, and I tried to work him through the year, and we were at UAB, and this is when Dr. Andrews was in Birmingham. So they had set us up to go see Dr. Andrews, and he said, well, look, Ray, if his knee doesn't respond here in the next week or two, then let's just do surgery when y'all finish the season and go from there. And it didn't. And so we set it up. And I remember telling my coach, he wanted to know the plan. What was the plan? And so, what are we doing? And when can he do this? And when can he do that? And I remember planning out and thinking, oh, my God, there goes my whole summer.
Yep.
Because I had planned right up into August. Well, the first August, we start football.
Yeah, and then he starts.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, man. So, you know, but that's just everything evolves.
Yeah.
Everything evolves and changes, and you got to adapt and you got to change with it. And, you know, it was one of those things where I think my situations where I was at, if I was any other place, and I think, and I don't mean to be rude towards the people I work with, but it, working with anybody different, I may have stuck around longer.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. No, I understand.
But it was a great time to get out. My family was changing, and so it worked out well. Worked out well.
I get it.
I get to meet you.
Yeah, no, to be honest, the honor was primarily yours, but
It was.
I loved it. And to this day, I mean, some conventions and some, I mean, it's always a blast. And so, what would you say, maybe, who would you say made the greatest impact on your career?
Jim Gillespie.
Okay. But so you hit on it earlier.
No,
that's
no.
Your guy.
No, he was. I think if you talk to anybody affiliated with the University of Southern Mississippi, they will bring up Jim Gillespie. He's an NATA Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
In the late 70s, early 80s, and probably through the 80s, he was head of continuing education for NATA.
Okay, yeah.
And he ran a tight ship. You know, he started the program at Southern, but he was just tough on you.
Yeah. How much did you lean, and you may not have, but how much did you lean on your network when you were getting kind of through the profession? It sounds like you did a lot with your coaches, but where would you say, like, when you got from position to position, how would you say how important was the network to you in developing relationships?
the network of your athletic network of trainers?
Or coaches in some instances. It sounds like you used coaches to get to Memphis, but.
Well, I don't, you know, I really think a lot of mine was just luck and right place at right time, you know.
Yeah, but think, no, I get, no, I don't disagree with that. But at the same time, I mean, you made an impact on somebody who then said, hey,
well,
why don't you come to Memphis? Or, hey, you know what, why do you leave?
Well, I will tell you this. I think Dean Weber just stuck his neck out.
Sure, yeah.
He stuck his neck out.
You were certainly fortunate. You had some good people, quality.
Well, Dean, if you know Dean Weber, he has literally got a heart of gold.
Yes, no question. Now,
he is chiseled rock, chiseled granite all around it, but a heart of gold. And to take that a step forward, when I was at the University of Memphis, I had a terrific young man, terrific student athletic trainer. Mm-hmm. And he was looking for grad assistantships.
Yep.
And there was one at Arkansas. So Dean had sort of moved up to be the director of sports medicine at that time. And Dean calls me up and says, well, the football athletic trainer called me up and said, Ray, tell me about this kid, Chris. And so I told him all about it, and we talked to him. He said, well, hold on, Dean wants to say something to you. And Jared, all he did, he got on the phone, and Dean said, will this son of a gun work as hard as you? I said, yes, sir. Click. He hangs up. Chris goes to Arkansas and is a graduate assistant for 3 years. Mm-hmm. Coach Nutt, as the story goes, and Chris sort of told me this, when Coach Nutt leaves Arkansas and goes to Ole Miss.
Yeah, my former.
Yeah. One of the people he called was Chris. I mean, you don't even know that.
Yeah.
Chris was he was at the University of Memphis. He'd come back to Memphis and was working under one of my old coaches. And Coach Nutt called him up. And the biggest thing was, I told Chris, I said, do you want to be head of or be over 100 athletes or 13?
Yeah, yeah.
No kidding. And he stayed. But Dean took my word for it.
Yeah.
He took my word for it. Jim Gillespie got me down in New Orleans, and there was somebody at New Orleans that I was working, that I knew, that I went to school with.
Sure.
But the move to the University of Memphis, my coach calls me and tells me about it. I was happy at New Orleans, but it was just a low-paying job. I mean, let's be honest. And I talked to Jim, and Jim goes, you got to take it. You got to go.
Yeah.
And I did not know the head athletic trainer at Memphis at that time, but Jim said, he's one of my best friends. Well, if he's one of your best friends, that's good enough for me.
I trust the people.
So the network was, it helped. It helped a lot.
I get it. Do you have any, maybe your favorite athlete, your favorite coach, your favorite nut job that you worked with? And what would you say, maybe some of your, maybe one fun story? Or something that a memory in your career, whether it be high school or anywhere. Of course, it's got to be relatively PG, preferably.
Oh, that's I will tell you that the two men that I worked for, the head athletic trainers, Dean Weber at Arkansas, and then God rest his soul, a guy named Eddie Cantler at University of Memphis. You know, they were cut and dried old school guys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they said what was on their mind, whether you liked it or not.
Yep. Kind of getting away from that a little bit these days.
Well, it is. In today's world, you have to be more politically correct.
Dean
and Eddie were not politically correct. And the days that you just wanted to throw a rope around their neck and choke them, well, the very next day, they would do something that just blew you away, either helping somebody or something like that. You know, when I was at Arkansas, we had a player commit suicide. And when all of that happened and came down, you know, I'm flabbergasted. I've never been around anything like that.
It's horrible. Yeah.
And Dean's leadership was, I thought, crucial.
Steady as a rock.
Steady.
Yeah.
The hardness that he was so known for just melted away.
Yeah.
But then again, there were times he helped me.
Yeah.
I went into his office one time. They screwed up my paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you've done it. You've been this way. You know, when you work for a state institution, you get paid once a month.
That's right.
So my first check, I get there the 1st of May. So the 1st of June, I'm expecting the check. Well, I don't get it. So I call the payroll people. And they go, oh, well, there was something wrong, something this, something that.
We'll get you back next week.
Yes, exactly right. That's what they told me. Well, I had a card.
Running out of plasma by now.
Exactly. I had a card note. I had a card note, like $150 or something. But now I'm petrified. I can't pay.
Yeah.
So I tell my roommate, Kevin. Kevin says, well, go talk to Dean. Well, man, I'd only been here a month.
Money or?
Yeah, I'd only been here a month.
Yeah.
And so, man, I'm petrified. I go up in there and I knock on his door. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What do you want? What do you want? What do you want? Can I talk to you? Yeah, hurry up. Come on in here. I ain't got all day. And so I tell him what's going on. He's like, we'll get it straightened out. So he gets on the phone. He calls personnel. Well, he says, well, look, just cut him a check. Well, then So the conversation escalates to he starts screaming and cussing at him. He hangs up and he says, all right, it's going to be next month before you get your check. What do you got? I said, I got a car note of $150. All right. And he pulls open a desk drawer and pulls out a money bag.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, he may have given me $250.
Yeah.
Will this hold you over? Yes. Yes. That's plenty. At the end of June, when I get my first check, you know, it's two checks.
Mm-hmm.
So I go in there, and I'm more comfortable with Dean now. So I go in there, and he's like, yeah, 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 what do you want, what do you want? I'm on the front of his desk, write my check out. I said, look, I'm fixing to give you back that money. What are you talking about? That money. And I don't look up and see him. I'm writing his check. And he's like, what the devil are you talking about? What are you talking about? And I look up, and I said, the money you gave me.
Yeah.
He goes, gosh, dog, I don't understand what you're talking about. And we make eye contact.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like,
a wink.
Oh,
yep.
So going above and beyond, man, helping me. Eddie Cantler at Memphis, again, an old school,
sure.
Says what's on his mind. Eddie was a chain smoker.
Mm-hmm.
He smoked. Good night, he smoked. But gruff and gruff and rah, 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 rah. We had a young man get caught up in an academic problem. He got caught with a bunch of football players plagiarizing a paper. They passed a paper around. And this young man has to go before a review committee there at the university. They're going to boot him out.
Mm-hmm.
And this student is telling me this, that Eddie comes up in there. And they call this kid's name, and they converse with him about what he had done and stuff. And I reckon the head of the committee goes, has anybody else got anything to say? And Eddie raised his hand. He said, look, this kid did wrong, and you got every right to boot him out, but this is a good kid. What are we teaching him? He said, don't worry about punishment. I'll take care of that. But this is a good kid.
You're in this kid's life.
Yeah, and, you know, you'll be doing a disservice by kicking him out of school. Kid stayed in school. He is a hugely productive certified athletic trainer today.
Okay.
And so, you know, those are two awesome guys. Those are two of many stories. Now, there's a lot of other stories I can tell that you'd have to cut off the mic for.
Probably, yeah.
But, you know.
I understand. You know, and actually, I've probably heard many of those. And that's probably best.
You've only heard a snippet.
Wait, that's the best part. If you sit down with any athletic trainer, they all have that
story. We have our stories.
Yeah, no question.
Every one of us. You got stories?
I'll give you one of mine. I was working at Florida Atlantic University, working with football there, and there was a head coach named Howard Schnellenberger.
Yeah.
So Schnelly was at Louisville for a number of years.
Yeah.
He was at Oklahoma.
Yep.
He was at Baltimore Colts. And if I recall, he was the offensive coordinator for Shula.
He was undefeated.
Undefeated championship.
Exactly right.
I'm sure he told everybody. That's why I remember that. But we had one of our kids, and I'm trying to remember the precursor to it. We had one of our kids that we weren't sure if he had a meniscus tear or not. We had an MRI, and we jumped on a flight. I feel like we played it. Not that it matters. Oklahoma State, I believe. We were on the road somewhere. And we got the orthopod flew with us. So he was like, well, I'll just bring the disc and, you know, look at it on the thing. But the kid came just in case. And, you know, if it's nothing, then he plays. If not. Now, we weren't, you know, this is one of our, probably our payday games. So we weren't expecting to win. We were just to make sure we balanced our budget for the company, for the department. So Christian Ellenberger. So John Burnside, who I worked with at Florida Atlantic, who's actually was at McNeese State for a little while, but he's an LSU graduate student.
Really?
In a Central Florida undergrad. Anyway, he's now, just so you know, update, he's now the head football player trainer at University of Tennessee. He just accepted that position.
Nice.
Been the last few weeks or month or so. But anyway, so Burnsy and I worked together at Florida Atlantic. And Schnelly, so Burnside and I were trying to figure out how much longer were we going to tell Coach Schnellenberger about that he had a meniscus tear. So we're having a conversation with him, and finally, and anybody that's got a Schnellenberger and worked with him knows they do the Schnelly talk. So John goes, hey Coach, need to let you know about the kid. You know, he does have a meniscus tear, and you know, we'll probably have surgery in about a week or so. He'll be out, you know, 3-4 weeks or whatever, and so probably the end of the season. We probably won't make it past the season, the end of the season. So he made the comment, and he goes, well, we redshirt our freshmen. Why don't we take out their meniscuses? Well, menisci. And so here's the thing about Schnelly. Schnelly had an old scar from when he played at University of Kentucky over his lip. The reason he grew out such a big bushy mustache is because to hide that scar. I found out.
I never knew that.
So the issue with Schnelly is you couldn't tell whether he was laughing or if he was happy or sad. If he was happy, the mustache went straight across. If he was upset, it would stay curved. So he's making this comment. Sorry, he's making this comment, and you know, Burnside and I are just staring at his mustache. Okay, is it looking at each other?
Is it straight or is it curved?
You know what I'm saying? But he was dead freaking serious, Ray. I really truly believe. So I jumped in and I was like, okay, well, Coach, I'll say this: if we do end up, you know, taking out doing a prophylactic meniscectomy on all your freshmen, I'm pretty sure next year's recruiting class is going to be terrible. But anyway, I happened to walk in, and Dr. Leo, who is our orthopedic surgeon, and I walked in. I was like, hey, Doc, just letting you know, Shelly wants to talk to you. He's like, okay, you know, is it about so and so kid? I was like, actually, no, it's about all the incoming freshmen next year. I was like, what's that? I said, he wants a prophylactic meniscectomy. So the only thing he asked, he goes, was the mustache straight or was it down? Well, how about this? One last thing. What would you say what words of advice would you give to students or young professionals get into the athletic training program today? What's that nugget?
Oh, Lord. You know, if you talk to older guys like me, we all have a nugget.
Yeah. What is it?
Oh, look, I would tell you first.
Yeah.
I don't know where I would be if I wasn't an athletic trainer. God put me here for a reason. I'm not good at math. Mm-hmm. Not good at English. So I'm in a profession that I dearly love.
Yep.
And you have to love this profession. It's a hard profession. If you're going to get in this for any other reasons, then you're going to be out soon.
Yep.
It's got to be a labor of love, you've got to treat it that way.
Yep.
Because if not, you won't be in it long.
No, you're right. I think everybody has to have, you know, to one extent or another, a giving heart, and it's like a teacher's profession.
Yeah.
You don't do it for the money. You do it for your kids, and
you don't do it for the hours.
No, God knows you don't. That's right. I agree, and I'll reiterate the same thing. I think in the end, you go into the profession to help people, and as long as you keep that as your focus, and that's got to get you kind of through the rough patches, just like any other job.
I'm telling you, I can have the worst day, but I can visit one of my high schools, and some little kid go, Mr. A, thanks.
Mm-hmm.
and it completely...
Man, it takes care of you for the next
changes,
month.
Oh, yep. Well, it maybe not the next month, but that day, yeah. I am taken care of for that day, or when a parent says thanks. Yep. I really appreciate it. Yeah. You know, I feel like I'm doing something right. Yep. It's a hard enough world, whether you're an athletic trainer or a banker or anything. It's a hard enough world, and I think we're all looking for that. That positive feedback,
sure.
of, man, you did something right.
Yeah.
You're good at what you do. And whether I'm good or not, I'll leave that up to the people that I take care of. I think I do them a good job. But when somebody says, Ray, thanks, I appreciate it, man,
well,
it means the world.
I've worked with some turds. And, I'll tell you what, whenever you're long and gone, I'll be sure to carry the torch.
Well, let me tell you what. You are a beacon of light in our profession. You were great to work with when you were a young man. You're great to know as an older man.
I appreciate it.
You know, if everybody could be like you, we'd all be living in a dream, baby. We'd all be living in a dream.
And I honestly throw it right back to, you know, you look at the people that have been in your life, and you just try to emulate them, whether it be one person worked their tail off, one person was great with their family, one person was great with coaches, maybe one person was just a great person in general, maybe one guy's a great taper or whatever. But I'd like to think that you take a little bit of every person, and that creates what you are. And I appreciate you saying that. You personally mean something very special to me, and I'm not trying to be weird on you, but no, I've really enjoyed our relationship over the years. And anyway,
we got many more to come,
right,
buddy. Many more to come.
But, hey, thank you for your time, and I appreciate it.
Man, anytime, buddy.
All right, cool.